on Creator Corner. We're going to leap off the POV conversation we had a few weeks ago and talk about a trope that is most often used with Tony's POV, but not really talked about or even identified, and that's unreliable narrator.
The concept of an unreliable narrator is a fairly broad one, but at its core, the idea is that the narrator of the story, so the POV character in a limited perspective, like first, close third, or something, is describing their surroundings, recounting their story, and thinking about the people they interact with in a way that is inaccurate in the grand scheme of things.
There are a few different reasons why a narrator might be unreliable. In murder mysteries or thrillers, it may be because the narrator is purposefully deceiving, keeping a truth from the reader so the tale appears to have one solution when in fact the narrator themselves was involved with the crime. This is kind of where we get the phrase red herring, for instance. Sometimes it's because the narrator is young, naive, or has a sheltered worldview. The book Room by Emma Donahue, for instance, that then went on to be a movie with Brie Larson and that she won an Academy Award for, the first half of that book is told from a 5-year-old's perspective. And so it's a very different story when you get to the second half of the book and realize that the 5-year-old was an unreliable narrator. Sometimes it's because the situation that the narrator is in prevents them from seeing all facets that are affecting them. And let's be honest, that's all of us.
So, for an example, let's think about the movie The Truman Show. It's okay if you haven't seen it. I'll give you a little rundown of how it works. I picked a movie specifically for this advanced example because, like many movies, it doesn't have a clear-cut POV like a book would have to have, which lets us imagine how different this story would look told from different POVs. If you haven't seen it, I'm about to spoil it, but it's about a young man who lives an idyllic little life in an idyllic little town. However, it turns out that his entire life is actually a TV show. He was taken as a baby and put in the show, and everything that happens to him has been decided by the production team. Everyone else in the town is an actor. The whole rest of the world is dedicated to watching the show, but Truman doesn't know he's being watched. If we were to read the beginning of that story from Truman's perspective, before he starts to suspect what's going on, we as readers would be told facts by him, like, this woman is my birth mother, this woman is my wife, and the boat crash that happened was an accident, and my dad is really dead. But every single other character in the whole story knows that these facts are lies. Truman would be an inadvertent, unreliable narrator. But what if we heard the story from the perspective of the producer of the show? We as readers wouldn't be told those facts were the truth. The producer knows the set, the job, his family are all lies. But he might tell other lies. He might tell the reader that Truman is happy, that this is for the best of everyone, that he has done Truman a favor by controlling his world like this. One is an unreliable narrator because he is limited by what he can see and know. The other is an unreliable narrator because he has to live in denial to justify what he's doing. Every time a reader is told something as fact that is not actually fact within the world of the story, you're dealing with an unreliable narrator. Like many things, this is a sliding scale from small misconceptions to, for example, the life of Pi, where at the end, again, spoilers, we are asked to question whether anything we just read was the truth or not.
There's a larger conversation to be had in here about the stories we tell ourselves and how often we as society are unreliable narrators of our own cultural history. But this isn't Professor Flame's History Corner, so let me move on. How does this pertain to Tony? Well, honestly, we see Tony used as an unreliable narrator for a couple of reasons. One of them is the most commonly probably because of his personal insecurities. As Robin talked about earlier, one of Tony's defining features is this difference between his public mask and his private fear. That insecurity twists the way he sees the world. And that's one of the things that, even though he is in his own skin, would tell you he's totally in control. Like the arc of the first three Iron Man movies is kind of him beginning to understand that he is his own unreliable narrator. And I think what he realizes in the cave in Afghanistan, for instance, is that he realizes that the stories he's been telling himself about his life are all lies. That what was happening, that's what Gomera really is for him. That's what seeing it. He had told himself what Howard had been telling him forever, that these weapons are important because you have to carry a bigger stick. And then when he saw the truth, he had to realize that probably all along he's known that that's not true. Probably all along he's on some level, clearly a genius. He's obtuse, but he's not a complete idiot. He probably consciously chose to not engage with that side of his brain, and the cave made him do it. So Then you get to Iron Man 3, where his panic attacks make him feel these really visceral threats that aren't actually there. Like, we as viewers can see that he's not in danger. The story that dives into his mind paints this different picture, and is we are told from his perspective that these dangers are very real. There's the subtle moments, like his choice to build Ultron because he's completely convinced this threat is coming. The fear that drives that, the story that he's telling himself, which is then twisted with the story that Wanda puts in his head, makes this view of the world unreliable. And he's spinning so far out of control, he doesn't even know he's unreliable. When we explore that in fic, in a narrative, we can lead the reader to the same conclusions the character comes to. Necessary, if we had an outside perspective, it would be clear that that conclusion Tony just came to is not actually the truth.
This is a powerful narrative tool in a lot of ways. It lets you have the trope of the narrator turning out to be the murderer in a mystery. It lets you build worlds like The Hunger Games, where information slowly trickles out to the narrator character, and as she learns more about her situation, sometimes accurate and sometimes not, it changes, obviously, the way that she interacts with her world. With Tony, we can do this in soft, small ways. For instance, him being sure Steve doesn't like him. He may describe in his narration Steve as cold, disappointed, commanding, frustrated with Tony. But then as the story goes on, we start to see cracks in that narration. Steve is shown instead to be maybe nervous, unsure, even in love and scared to say it. As Tony discovers these things, so do we as readers.
There's also larger ways we can explore Tony as an unreliable narrator. My personal favorite is to explore his PTSD, not just things regarding like space and water and how they can create feelings of danger where there isn't any, but his very real PTSD from, I think, like just his whole world crumbling around him and everything falling apart. And there's specific triggers like water, the waterboarding and enclosed spaces and people handing him things. And we see that kind of stuff. And then of course, like flying a nuke into a hole in the sky, because of course.
That's gonna mess with you.
it's gonna fuck you with you a little bit. But then of course, this man who is afraid of small spaces puts himself in a suit all the time. And like, what does that dichotomy mean? But these nightmares, as we kind of play with them in fic and write with them, they can be written as real, submerging the reader into the same fear that Tony's in, only to reveal a couple sentences later that it was only a dream. So you can also create conflict between the narrative character and the reader. I am playing with this a lot in the long whip that I'm doing right now while you were sleeping, at least according to every single comment I have gotten in the last three chapters. And I know, Farrah, you do this with some of yours as well. Mm-hmm. Tony may come to accept Steve's feeling for him much more slowly than the reader does. The reader can figure out that they're just in the head of an unreliable narrator, or perhaps multiple unreliable narrators, and use that conflict with the character to drive the emotional impact of the story. And it's what leads us to comment, why won't these idiots just use their words?
I actually think that this is sort of a... it's an almost unique aspect of fan fiction specifically, because when you know what the ship is and you've sought something out because of a specific endgame ship, and so you have an idea of how things are going to turn out, you are less likely to believe an unreliable narrator who sees impermeable obstacles to that relationship, and more likely to be like, why won't you just talk to each other? You guys are, you know... I've had single POV stories where one of the characters is being, appears to be quite cold or indifferent or not interested. And you still get a lot of comments of being like, that person just loves you. Why don't they, you know, why won't you just talk? And it's like, what made you think that they loved the POV character? They've not shown that at all. But it's this acceptance that because we are reading fan fiction and we are here for a specific ship and there was a happy ever after tag on the story, that we know they must be unreliable.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I also read a lot of romance novels, which don't necessarily have a ship, but the couple is pretty much introduced on the back cover.
Right.
So what makes it interesting to me as a writer then is creating valid enough reasons to the characters for them to not use those words and continue to be unreliable.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, how far can I stretch... how far can I stretch that a human being would make these decisions before I give in to the contrivances of fan fiction and allow them to confess their love for each other, probably much quicker than they would in real life, because humans are terrible at using our words.
So true.
But this is, yeah, like you said, the fic, I like that point about the single POV, because I don't really write single POV, so I haven't gotten those comments.
Right.
That's fascinating that, yeah, we imprint the ship. Like, we imprint the happily ever after onto it, even if the story isn't there yet.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
I often feel like my readers are jumping the gun sometimes. I'm like, no, he doesn't even love him yet. Like, give them time to fall in love, but they're so ready for the love to happen that they see it right away. And I mean, maybe it's also, you know, I don't want to say a failure of my writing, but I can't help but write those little notes in there that show that they're going to be in love very soon.
Well, I mean, I don't think that that's a failure of your writing. I think that that's, you have to play with us both ways. Like, you have to keep them apart, but you have to also let us, like, you don't write a whole lot of enemies to lover stuff, like flat out spitballing enemies.
No, maybe only once or twice.
Yeah. And so if you're not going to write a like flat out, like, and there's, I don't read a whole lot of fic that are super strong enemies to lovers. I'll do like bickering or indifferent.
Yeah.
But like the novels I've read, like there's one by Sally Thorne called The Hating Game. Like, these two people hated each other.
Right.
And were corporate rivals and like all this other stuff. And like, you know, they're going to get together at the end of the book because they're the couple on the back cover.
Right.
But it probably wasn't until 75% of the way through, like, we realized they loved each other at the same time they did.
Interesting.
And if she had done a different pace to that book, it wouldn't have worked as well.
Yeah, it's a big challenge to get readers to forget, like, if especially if it is one POV and there is negative feelings there. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot to convince readers to forgive the character that is hated by the POV character. Even yep. There's slower to forgive than the POV character usually is. So I think that's a hard pacing game to play, to bring it to a point where the reader wants them to fall in love instead of being like, wait, I thought we still hated this guy. What's going on?
Yeah, and it's almost like you're the best friend getting together over cocktails and being like, wait a minute, who do we yeah. hate again now?
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute, you're fucking him now? We hated him last week. What's going on?
Exactly.
So, like, I mean, there is a very clear balancing act, and we have to think about it not only as creators, but honestly as readers, because everybody, like, your mileage varies on this tension. There are stories that I'll forgive a whole lot more just because of the way the unreliable narrator is played with. And then there's other like kind of ticks where I'm like, not so much. Mm-hmm. But as a creator, especially, we have to think about kind of all of these facets when it comes to giving the readers information through the lens of this narrator guiding them.
Yeah, I think one of the most beautiful things about a close narration is getting to play with reliability. And I, more than you, tend to write with one POV. So I think it's both sort of challenging and exciting to use that reliability as both a barrier for the reader and an opportunity to show them things that maybe the narrator is being unreliable about. I think it lets a story unfold instead of slam down in one piece, and it allows for twists and turns and gives space for a reader to be frustrated or upset with a character for the choices they make, but then still understand and forgive those choices because they're seeing them being made from that perspective.
That's fascinating, because I feel the same way about making sure to switch POVs. Like, that's why I want to switch them so often, so that I have multiple unreliable narrators.
It's interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I do switch POV, but if someone said you can only do one from now on, I'd just do one POV. I think that I prefer having the reader fall in love with the love object. That's not the right phrase, is it?
No, I see what you're saying. So like, if you're writing Tony's POV, you want them to fall in love with Steve the same way Tony does?
Yeah, at the same rate he does and for the same reasons he does, instead of getting to see behind the curtain. And I think part of that is that for me, the relationship has to be convincing from each side, or in real life, you know, each person only has their one side. So for me, it's like, if I can convince a reader that this relationship is meant to be from just the one perspective, they're not getting any cheater information. All they've got is the same thing that Tony would have while he fell in love with Steve. And therefore, if it works, it was done well.
That's interesting. Yeah, that now makes me feel like maybe I'm taking the easy way out. But like,
no, I mean, I didn't mean to say
you're
it like
not,
that.
You're
for
not
me,
saying that at all. No, you're not saying
that's
that.
That's what engages me.
No, that makes sense. I didn't ever think about it that way. I think I'm such a context person. This is, I'm like thinking as I'm talking here.
Yeah.
that I want, and I also build up their whole worlds, because as we know, I know what times the trains run in AU. So like, I want the whole thing around them. Like, Marie makes fun of me all the time because I never just say so-and-so went out to eat. I name the restaurant and the dish they order.
Yeah.
And that's not your style. So it would make sense that, like, for me, you have to see the whole world in order for me to feel like I'm really building it.
Yeah, it feels like a waste of creation if you haven't shown all the sides.
I guess to a certain extent, yeah. And I have the most fun also writing stories where the two of them are obtuse idiots and it's the friends that make them get together.
Yeah, yeah.
So that fits my style more, but they're always unreliable. Because like I said, for me, fundamentally, I believe all humans are their own unreliable narrators.
For sure, absolutely.
And we are, and because you and I both try to write these folks as really gut level, vulnerable and authentic humans, it would make sense that this is kind of what comes out. So there are lots of ways to write Tony, especially when we take into account all of the AUs. Like, I think about the things that we can carry about him from universe to universe. Like, we've even talked about it with comics a little bit between you and I, Farron, of like the things that I always have to remember. I'm reading an alts fic when I see the word darling 400 times.
Yeah.
And I have to double check tags sometimes to remember I'm reading a 616 story, because there are enough similarities that it's almost like, sure, all like Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland, England, Wales, Australia, New Zealand, United States, and Canada all speak English.
Yes.
We speak somewhere around 900 kinds of English.
At least.
And like I tell the story all the time. The first time I went to Northern Ireland, I was sitting there and somebody said, hey, do you want to dander down to the garage and get some notes out of the hole in the wall?
Mm-hmm.
And I just blinked at them. It was like, I those are words. I don't know what any of them mean. And of course it was, do you want to take a walk to the, like, to the 7-Eleven and get some money out of the cash machine? And I didn't, it took me a long time to kind of put that through. And in some ways, like, that's what Tony is from AU to AU, from MCU universe from Marvel universe to Marvel universe.
They're different dialects of the same language.
He's different dialects of the same language. So there's enough stuff that's true. Like, it's really weird for me to read a Tony AU that doesn't involve his relationship with money somehow.
Mm.
It's really weird to write one that doesn't involve parental abandonment issues somehow.
Nice. Let the man be happy at least in one version.
Well, you can overcome parental abandonment issues. Like, he goes to therapy in most of my stories. But like, there are some ticks for me that have to kind of go through it. But the beautiful thing is the flexibility.
Yeah.
And his role as this unreliable narrator, as we've explored here, especially with his PTSD, particular episodes and his particular triggers in the MCU, and I'm sure there are some in the various comics verses I'm not familiar with, but it allows for some really rich explorations into all the facets of his personality. And we hope that you consider this particular feature. You've probably written him as an unreliable narrator, or you've read him or as this way before, and you maybe have never connected the dots that that's what's happening. So as you intentionally consume Tony Fix moving forward, we hope that you keep this in mind when you are creating something for our favorite genius billionaire playboy philanthropist.